You've been pouring into your personal finance education, and you're starting to feel more empowered to manage your own investments. You might have even played around with online calculators and realized how much that 1% advisor fee is really costing you. But years ago, when you were less confident and didn't know better, you hired someone to help with this. They grew into someone you call a friend, and although you know the math and feel capable of handling your own investments on your own now, you're having difficulty cutting ties. It's not easy to break up with someone, especially if they treated you well, answered your phone calls, and have been sending you an annual Christmas card. But I help you with the hard things, and it's time. With this in mind, how can we make this a smooth process, set ourselves up for success, and respectfully and professionally break up with our financial advisor? Well, that's today's conversation. To help me unpack this topic, I've invited on Tess Weresmith. Tess is a financial coach that's helped people feel confident with investing. But this wasn't always the case for her. After socking away a ton of money working on cruise ships after she graduated, Tess hired a financial advisor to help her turn her savings into real wealth. But after some bad advice and some other financial mishaps, Tess lost $80,000 and had to reset. Through a lot of self-education, Tess learned how to invest on her own through simple yet effective methods. In this episode, Tess shares the math behind the real cost of a financial advisor. She shares an easy step-by-step process for breaking up with your advisor, even if you don't like confrontation. And she even tells us how to handle objections if your financial advisor pushes back. We also talk about when it might be appropriate to hire help and who might be the right person for that situation. So let's get into it. I hope you enjoy my conversation with the aerial acrobatic and high-diving financial coach, Tess Weresmith. You know those moments where you think, I wish I would have learned this in school? Those are the topics that we love to talk about. Join me each week as I interview experts sharing their strategies for solving problems that us young adults will face throughout our 20s and 30s. So what are you waiting for? If you want new episodes about adulting advice every Monday, hit that follow button.
For 3 years, I was on cruise ships. For part of it, I was an aerial acrobat. And then I also did some sales for a while on the cruise ship before I officially returned to land.
Oh, interesting. So I know your personal finance journey really kind of started on the cruise ship. You lived really cheaply and saved a bunch of money while working on a cruise ship after you graduated college. And you wanted to start building wealth, so you reached out to a financial advisor. Where were you with your financial education and what led you to choose that financial advisor?
Sure. So I had actually gotten into the idea of investing from a friend of mine, actually an ex-boyfriend that was on the cruise ship with me. And so he had given me an investing book about picking stocks. And when I read it, it just went way over my head. It felt very confusing. It was very deep in technical analysis. And so unfortunately, I think reading that book made me think, you know what, investing is not accessible to the average person. I fancy myself pretty intelligent and this feels very complex. I don't want to mess this up, so I'll hire somebody. And so I had grown up with a woman that was 3 years older than me. She was friends with some of my friends. And that felt like the best way to go because I knew her and I trusted her. And That's how I originally found my financial advisor. It was somebody I already knew that I trusted, and I felt like that would be a good option.
I feel like, especially in this world in particular, financial advising, insurance, kind of any of the financial services space, it typically is somebody that you know or somebody that you know, someone that you knows. It's a very heavy referral business. So I can totally understand that. I want to talk a little bit about the actual cost of an advisor, though. And I know this was kind of so very similar to you. I had a friend introduce me to a financial advisor. Really looking back on it, it was an insurance salesman, not really a financial advisor. It was one of those well-known names that I can't say on this podcast right now, but if I said it, everybody would know this company. They introduced me to this person, and I was trying to do all the right things. My dad really set me up for success in terms of like saving and living below your means and all of that. But he didn't quite know a lot about investing. So I was a little lost there outside of like, hey, go take advantage of your 401k and the match at your work. I did that, but I started to have this excess money and I'm like, okay, I need to deploy this so I can start generating wealth with it. So I got introduced to this financial advisor. I started working with them, and it was a couple years later that I picked up the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. He has that one chapter in there about the cost of a financial advisor, and that kind of triggered me to start thinking about it. And once I did the math, I was like, holy cow, like I have to actually do this. Granted, I did not, you know, the next day go and call my advisor and let them go and move everything to a DIY approach. It took me many, many of months because I'm non-confrontational and I really wanted to think through it. But can you walk me through a little bit of the math behind actually how much an advisor costs? Because I know many people say, hey, my advisor told me it's just a 1% fee.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you just nailed it, right? 1% feels really innocuous. It feels so small. Every other rate that we use in our life, right? Whether it's like credit card interest rates or mortgage rates or whatever, they're so much higher. You never hear a 1% fee. So 1% feels so small. And so I also, it's interesting that you said you picked up a book because I also picked up a book. It was Money Master the Game, Tony Robbins,
yep,
where he talks a lot about fees. And that's what opened my eyes to the situation that I was in. And so when I did the math on fees, for me personally, how much I was paying the financial advisor, not to mention the fact that that's just one fee, right? There's also the fees of the actual investments themselves. So I always tell people this, that when they say, oh, I'm only paying 1%, if you're working with a financial advisor, that's part of it, but there's still another fee for whatever you're investing in. And a lot of times financial advisors are incentivized to invest you into funds that tend to have high fees because they earn commissions. So, but for the sake of an easy example, let's pretend that you have a financial advisor that is charging you a 1% fee. If you and a friend decided to start investing at 25, you had $0 invested so far and you just decide to start at 25, and each of you are able to max out your Roth every year. So the Roth IRA, that's a retirement account. It's a great account for anybody that's earning money under a certain income. A Roth IRA, anyone can open. You don't have to do it through your employer, right? So with your Roth IRA, you can contribute up to $7,000 per year right now. If you did that for 25 years and you got roughly an 8% return, which is roughly the historical average, minus 2%. If you did that on your own without a financial advisor, you'd have about $1.6 million. If you did the same thing, so all things being equal, you're 25 years old, you're maxing out your Roth IRA every single year for 40 years. If you were paying a 1% fee, you'd end up paying $1.2 million. So we are talking about a difference of $400,000 in retirement just with a 1% fee investing over a 40-year period starting in your 20s.
Wait, do you have the contribution amount in that 1.6 initially?
Ooh, I can do it really quickly for you because it would just be 7,000 times, 7,000 times 40, right? So it would be 280,000.
Okay, so to repeat some of the math, because I know we're on audio here, I invest $7,000 over the next 40 years. That is $280,000 with compound interest at a 8% assumption. My investment would be $1.6 million. But if I let my financial advisor invest that money on my behalf and they're charging me a 1% fee, I would actually end up with $1.2 million. So a $400,000 difference. So over time, I'm paying my financial advisor to manage my investments $400,000. Is that right?
It's wild. Yes. And I use this math a lot to explain when people say, I don't know if I want to learn how to invest. I don't know if this is for me or if it's too complicated. When you put it into that perspective, when you're talking about over a quarter million to $500,000, and this is just if you're maxing out your Roth, if you were investing in other accounts above and beyond that, or you left a job and you rolled over a 401k that had 20 grand in it, all of a sudden, this compounds to a lot more than $400,000. This is just one example. So I always hope that this math, and I share this type of math a lot, encourages you to want to learn how to reduce your fees because it's so much more impactful than we realize once you actually start looking at the calculators and understanding that just like your money compounds, the fees compound as well.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And it's, I know it's something crazy on that math. It ends up being like 37% or something of the total. And it's just really hard to conceptualize how 1% really turns into 37% of the total pie. But if you go and look up a compound interest calculator and you do this math, you figure it out pretty quickly. And like I said, I know that's where I was. And especially for the 20 somethings that are looking for early retirement, financial independence, maybe, you know, by mid 40s, maybe even earlier than that, some of these fees are actually super important and can shave off 5, 10, 15 years of potential earning and investment power over time. And you also have to avoid the financial advisor potentially selling you the wrong product, which I know was in both of our stories.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And, you know, we just touched on this a little bit, but right, that's just the fee for the financial advisor. You're not counting the fees for whatever you're invested in. And a financial advisor that's charging you assets under management, it's called an AUM fee. That's what you're paying when you're paying a percentage of your money. They're usually not super incentivized to teach you about the fees of your investments. So they're not going to tell you if you're investing in, you know, low fee funds or high fee funds. They're just going to do it for you. And if you don't know the basics, then you could be paying a lot more than 1%. Like the example we just did, Justin, was 1%. Most people are paying all-in fees of probably closer to 2% plus.
Yeah.
So that amount, that difference that you save on fees compounds a lot when you start to learn the basics and realize that you can do a lot of investing on your own.
Tess, I know we're both so passionate, mostly because we both probably feel like we got a little bit screwed in all of this. But granted, we got screwed right at the right time. It was, you know, very early on in our investing journey. It wasn't, you know, 30 years after that we kind of figured this out. But, you know, not only was it, I was put in high fund fees. Like I remember I transferred them all whenever I turned into a DYI investor. And I had one mutual fund that I was in that was 1.6%, had a 1.6% fee. So I was paying 1% for my advisor and another 1.6 expense ratio to this fund as well. And I'm like, who would have ever in their right mind made that decision? Therefore, the financial advisor needs to make up at least 2.6% in terms of outperforming the average to even become part of the average at that point in time. It was ridiculous. And we got sold, you got sold an annuity. I got sold a life insurance product that just were not right for us. And both of us really didn't see any money out of that decision.
Yeah, it's really a shame. But I will say, I think you nailed it, right? I do feel blessed that I figured this out in my 20s because it was upsetting. I had a ton of shame. I felt super stupid, right? Especially because I was trying to do the right thing. So if you're listening to this and you're somebody that is in a situation or has a financial advisor, you know, don't feel bad. We've made this mistake. But if you can learn early enough, you can change your financial future. And in a weird way, I probably should be thanking this financial advisor because once I learned all this stuff, I also learned how powerful compound interest is at an early age. So I aggressively invested everything I could over the last 10 years. I made a lot of other life decisions to help build my wealth faster. I did house hacking, which is when you know, buy a multifamily, you live in one unit and you rent out the others. Then I ended up becoming a millionaire in my 30s, which I probably wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have been screwed over by this financial advisor, who, by the way, and I think this is an important point, Justin, I want to make. I don't actually think there was any intentional wrongdoing on her part. I think the industry is just so broken in so many ways that financial advisors in some institutions are taught and are positioned that these products are good for the clients that they're working with. So just for anyone that's saying, oh, well, I like my financial advisor, I don't think they're trying to intentionally screw me. I don't think that's always the case. It's not necessarily malicious. It's just sort of a broken model of the financial industry. And I'm happy to see that there's a lot of better ones out there, which we can touch on in a little bit.
Yeah. And we don't hate financial advisors. I mean, I've had many of financial advisors on the show. There's another one coming on next week. And there's a lot of really good that comes out of financial advisors. But for 20-somethings that have a simple investing approach, more times than not, you should probably at least consider the option of potentially managing your investments on your own. and be asking the questions around the cost that that advisor is really charging you. Because I know for some people, it seems like their advisor doesn't cost them any money whatsoever, because they're holding on to your money, their fee or their costs are taken out in kind of this, I don't know, sly way, so that you don't really even feel the impact. It's not like I'm getting a monthly invoice every single month that was like, hey, I charged you this amount every single month. No, I just look at my accounts and they're at this level. And I was like, cool, awesome. They're going up if we're in a good market. They're going down if they weren't in a good market. I wasn't necessarily seeing the impact of the fees, how the fees impacted those particular investment accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Some of the scenarios where you might actually want to consider a financial advisor. I want to carve that out real quick here, because I know there's going to be a little bit of pushback. Once again, this is mostly 20-somethings that are listening to this that are getting started on their investing journey here. Are there any scenarios in which you think, hey, maybe you should be utilizing an advisor right now? And can you give me some language around potentially hiring the right financial advisor? Because once again, I don't want people to hire an insurance salesman thinking they're hiring an advisor.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely think there are some situations where it might make sense to get some help from a financial advisor, or, and I think this is actually even more common, a tax professional. So a lot of times the biggest questions when it comes to investing when you're in your 20s and 30s is how to use retirement accounts, retirement account rules. If you switch jobs and you have an old 401k, what should you do with it? If you roll that over into an IRA, which is something that a lot of people do so they can take control of the money from their previous employer. If you do that, what does that look like? How is that going to impact your taxes? And so I think in a lot of cases, Justin, actually, one of the first places you go might be a tax person to help you make those decisions. So that's one of the more confusing parts, I think, about learning how to invest, like learning the basics of investing in simple investments like index funds, you know, funds that hold a bunch of different stocks at once. Learning the basics of that is not too challenging. But what can be complicated, and the rules do change, is the tax side of things and the retirement account. So I think if you're struggling to understand, you know, your retirement account options, that might be a reason to. If you inherit some money, that would be another reason to, depending on like what the inheritance looks like. If you're going through a divorce or something like that, I would say like major life change. Usually if you have like a big influx of money, there might be some tax implications around that, or you might need some help with that. So, you know, there are so many wonderful ways to self-educate. There's wonderful books out there. Justin and I have both already mentioned two that are great. There's so many ways you can learn at a really like relatively affordable rate. What I will say is if you do feel like you need a financial professional, there are so many wonderful flat fee advisors that will just charge you hourly. And so that might feel like a lot of money. Some of them can be expensive, although there's a lot of new platforms that are coming out that charge hourly that aren't too bad. You know, it's like $150 an hour, $200 an hour, which in your 20s can sound like a lot. But just remember that you're paying for some information that is going to help your money compound over and over and over again. So if you're really struggling, it's definitely worth it. And I think, Justin, you nailed it when you said, I think a lot of people are attracted to the fee, the, you know, percent fee, the assets under management fee type of advisor, because it doesn't feel like you're paying a lot because you get your statement and it just gives you your return. But your return has the fees already included, so you can't really see what you're paying. You're probably paying your advisor over time a lot more. Not probably. You will be paying your advisor a lot more over time with a small percentage versus shelling out, you know, $500, $1,000 to like get your plan in place and then just make sure that you're contributing regularly. So, you know, I do think there are circumstances where a financial advisor can be really helpful, but it's not necessarily around choosing investments, because as we know, most of the time, actively managed portfolios that are managed by somebody trying to beat the market, trying to pick specific stocks, historically hasn't beat really simple investing like investing in index funds. So I would say that when you need a financial advisor, it's usually not necessarily to choose investments. Once you learn the basics, you can absolutely do that yourself, but potentially around complexity when it comes to different types of accounts and taxes and whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. tax professional for sure. Like one of my favorites, Sean Mullaney, FI Tax Guy. He's been on the show twice. He's coming back here in the next month or so. So we'll have another episode out with him in the near future. Go consume his blog if you want to feel educated around taxes. He's really, really good about that kind of stuff. And Jeremy Schneider, Personal Finance Club, just dropped out Nectar, which is the kind of
I was thinking of Nectar. That's the one I was thinking of. It's $150 an hour, right?
Yeah, $150 an hour.
It's wonderful.
They pair you with an advisor specific to your situation. Anyone that knows Jeremy is also a big fan of managing your own investments and kind of simplifying retirement, your kind of retirement planning approach. And he's done a really good job, I think, putting together this product and allowing people to hire financial advisors. And once again, $150 to $300 an hour maybe sounds like a lot right now. But if you look at that difference on that earlier example, the 1.6 to the 1.2, that's nowhere near $400,000 over a lifetime. So if you need to go and hire them once a year to do some tax planning or to look at your portfolio and give you some specific help on some very specific areas, you're probably still going to come out ahead, assuming that the $400,000 over 40 years, that's $10,000 a year that you're paying
Absolutely.
A financial advisor. So yeah, if you want to go ahead and spend 1% of that or 2% of that and go hire some professional help for an hour or two every year to answer some specific questions, I think that's a good idea.
It's definitely worth it from the flat fee perspective, especially because when you really think about the type of people that do flat fee financial advising or even flat fee like tax professional, a lot of times those people will teach you. So it's not necessarily like you have to go back over and over again. I think that's something that you should look for when you are searching for somebody if you do need are in a situation where you do need professional help. One of the greenest of flags is if they will educate you and they'll break stuff down and you don't get off the call feeling like this is too complicated for you to understand, because most things can be explained with some patience and normal words. So
yes,
I would say that that's a green flag when you're looking for somebody. I have a wonderful financial advisor friend who charges on a flat fee and she educates people. So if people don't want to DIY invest, you know, she teaches them and a lot of times they end up doing it themselves later on as well. So I think just making sure that anyone you're working with is really explaining it to you in a way that makes sense so that you can repeat on your own.
And I mean, when you zoom out and look at it, that you're probably a little bit more aligned with a fee only, you know, with them wanting to educate you or help you with this very specific scenario or do some more long-term planning, that totally makes sense. If you look at an advisor that's looking at the lifetime value of you as a client, they're probably not that incentivized to go ahead and help educate you and to explain these things, because your lack of knowledge is going to be something that they profit from.
Well said.
Let's now get into the mechanics of how to actually break up with your advisor. It's one thing to know the math, and I do think the math is going to help a lot of people, but now it's the day. We need to make a call, send out an email. Tess, how did you do it? Like, how did you let go of your advisor, and what kind of advice can you give people that are looking at this math and realizing I probably should make that decision too?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I will say that it definitely does feel like a breakup. Of all the professional relationships you'll have in your life, this one does really feel like you're breaking up with somebody. And I know, I think it's because of the weight of it being money, right? Which money is such a big topic. It's a taboo topic. So if you're feeling scared to leave your financial advisor, you feel awkward about it, or you feel bad, that's normal. You shouldn't feel bad because it's your money. And it's important that you remember that it's your money, right? But I will say that if you feel awkward, it really does feel like a breakup for everyone I've ever worked with. And I get a lot of clients in my coaching program that are leaving their financial advisors to DIY invest, probably because of my story. And that's what I share. So I've done a lot of scripts actually on this exact topic. So one thing I will say is that the best thing you can do for yourself is be confident in what you're going to do next. Mm. So before you even get to the script, if you aren't sure roughly how you want to invest your money, so if you're learning about index funds, which is a great simple investment, you know, you want to have a sense of how you're going to invest your portfolio and where. So which brokerage are you going to use? Like a Fidelity or Vanguard? Those are great places where you can open up IRAs or brokerage accounts or any type of investing account, right? So the best thing you can do for you to make sure you come off confident and you don't get caught off guard and you don't get a ton of objections is to make sure that you're prepared and you have a plan. So, you know, the fees suck, but it once you find out about it, doesn't mean you have to do it like tomorrow. Yeah. You know, like you want to be prepared, take your time. You know, a few months of that 1% fee or a month of that fee isn't going to kill you at all. So I would say first, take your time so you're prepared and you feel confident so that when they do have objections, which most likely they will, you know, you feel good about your plan. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is to be very clear about what you're doing and why. So when you start, if you're writing an email, for example, you could say something like, thank you so much. I really appreciate the help. I've spent time educating myself and I've decided I wanted to take a more active role in my investing. My goals have changed. And so I'd like to manage my finances in a more hands-on way. I'm going to be moving my accounts to Fidelity. Mm. If you say it very directly what you're going to do, that will to them, they'll receive that in a way that makes them feel like you've already made this decision. Like this isn't open for discussion.
Yeah.
If you leave it open for discussion, then you're going to get a lot of objections like, you know, I'm able to provide you with ways to invest or like you could lose money doing this. And it might make you doubt yourself. But if you've done the work and you know how you're going to invest and you've learned a little bit about index funds or ETFs, whatever you're investing in, then that's not going to bother you. So I think the preparation is the most important thing. And then when you're communicating it, being direct and then not opening it up. Like I saw one email, bless her heart, super nice, nice woman in one of my programs. She was like asking for permission. Like, is that okay? No, like none of that. Because at the end of the day, these people are salespeople, right? They're trained in sales. They're trained to, and this is how they make money. They're trained to sell you and they're trained to, you know, make sure they hold on to your money as long as possible. That's how they make a living. So they'll do anything to object to the fact that you're going to manage it yourself. Mm-hmm. So the prep number one, Justin, and then I would say just be direct with your plan and then ask for the next step. So please let me know. I would love your help with this transition. Super grateful for what you've done for me. Can you help me? I'd like to move my accounts to Fidelity. Please let me know next steps.
Yeah.
And then you've just kind of like wrapped it up there. I don't know if you have anything to add, Justin, but
that's... No, I took a very similar approach as well. I started this journey probably a year before I fired my advisor, started to get educated, really started to learn and actually realize how simple it was to go ahead and set up your own accounts and to manage your own investments. And I had a game plan. I even started doing a little bit of that on my own with some other money, like rather than give them some extra money to invest into my brokerage, I went ahead, set up a brokerage account inside of Fidelity. I set up an IRA account inside of Fidelity. And I started to actually invest in those. Like I would be investing all of the money that I currently had with my advisor. So I did that for a couple of months, felt really confident just around the transaction and the performance that was happening in those accounts. And then I went ahead and pulled the trigger with a very direct email. And of course, they wanted a follow-up call right after that. And even on that call, it was really challenging. I heard a lot of things like, are you sure this is the approach that you want to take? Do you feel comfortable? You know, I can outperform what you can do on your own. Like I heard a ton of different things and it was a little dehumanizing to an extent, but also put some doubt in yourself. But at the end of the day, you have to fall back on the knowledge and the plan that you put in place and to go back and think about it from a logical standpoint with the money aspect as well, and just go ahead and still move forward. And many,
yes.
And if they won't help you on the next steps or they're delaying some of the next steps, if you go to Fidelity, if you go to Vanguard, their team will help pull some of your investments forward too.
Yes, that's a great point. I did the same thing, Justin, and I tell people this all the time too. It can feel really daunting. And unless you've done it yourself, the first time you start to invest your money and, you know, it's going to be nerve wracking. It's very anticlimactic when you buy your investments. You like expect something to happen and then you just buy them and it's like, okay, that's it. But I did the same thing. So when I left my financial advisor, I opened an account in Vanguard. And I think for at least like 3 to 6 months, I just had the money in there in a very simple 3-fund index fund portfolio, I believe. And that gave me the confidence to have the conversation with my financial advisor. The other thing I did was I compared the performance of my new portfolio. There's so many great tools online, but there's a way you can sort of backtest your portfolio. So I actually looked and saw, okay, this simple portfolio I chose for myself would have given me, you know, 9% returns over the last decade, whatever it was, with my financial advisor after fees, I was averaging like 6%. So I knew that even the S&P 500, which is, you know, the top 500 largest companies, and that's always used as a benchmark to track how the overall stock market is doing, the S&P 500 itself over the last decade has done about 10%. So if you just invested in that, I would have gotten 4% returns higher than my financial advisor. So that's where that education piece really comes in and really helps you feel confident with what you're doing. And I also think now with, you know, like Jeremy's Nectarine?
It might be Nectarine. I think you're right, actually.
Okay, Jeremy, sorry if we're getting this wrong, but he's great, right? So he's created this platform. So like, the other thing I think is really important to remember is that once you break up with your financial advisor, it's not like you can ever get professional help again, right? Like, you're moving your stuff over. That's awesome. You're going to save a lot of money. If you need help, there's plenty of, you know, flat fee hourly people that can help you. And it feels like like you're losing your life raft forever. And I think that can be like really scary for people. But thankfully, in this day and age, there's so many great resources. So you're really not alone. You can find someone to help you for sure.
Yeah. And I know we probably painted financial advisors in this really negative light. And I feel like we've been very aggressive towards it at financial advisors in this conversation. But there is a way to do this in a respectful and professional manner so that you can still have a relationship with that person, especially if this is a family member or a friend of a friend or something to that extent. There's always a way. Financial advisors or any person that you hire, there is an appropriate professional way to fire someone or to let someone go and still have a relationship afterwards. And honestly, all really great salespeople will know that they should not burn a bridge during that point in time, because there is always an opportunity for an old client or an old customer to come back and be a new customer to you. So it'd be a huge red flag for me if somebody was super aggressive or kind of just burned the bridge behind me as the end of our relationship. Then I know for a fact our relationship was truly transactional and there wasn't actually a relationship established in this relationship between the two of us.
Yes, well said. I think that's a really good point. If you're getting a lot of pushback and you don't feel comfortable, and I think that's a red flag in general too when you're working with an advisor. I've had a lot of women in my small group coaching programs tell me that they've asked questions and the response has been like, that's too complicated for you to understand, or like, you know, things that are very demeaning. And so if you don't feel good about your relationship with your financial advisor, that is enough to find somebody else. Like, I don't care like what their performance is. We know based on data that it's almost impossible to consistently beat the average returns of the stock market. So at the very least, your financial advisor should be educating you and helping you with your money. And if they're not, and helping you understand what's happening with your money. And if they're not doing that, that's a red flag. And then of course, if you do go to break up and it doesn't go well, that's another red flag. So there are so many wonderful financial advisors out there, and the flat fee ones, they will educate you. So there is an opportunity. If you really need someone, there's absolutely some great ones out there, but ones that don't educate you isn't really for me.
So let's make a hard transition with that phrase education. One of my favorite things about you is how simple you make investing and financial terms in general. I had such a blast researching you, and you would say these words and then you'd be like, whoa, wait, pause. Like, let me just tell you what that word is in really simple terms. So I'm hoping we could speed round a couple of words. I throw some at you and you define it or kind of give it some simple definition and maybe a sentence or two. Does that work for you?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's first
start with a fund. What does it mean, you know, if I'm saying stock fund or investing fund, things like that, what does the word fund mean?
A fund is just a group of stocks all together that you can buy at one time. So if we hear mutual funds a lot, that's what most people have heard.
Yep.
That's just a group of stocks. And then index funds are a group of stocks, but it's a different group of stocks. And it's usually tracking an index, which index just means list. So it's a list of stocks, really. That's like the most simple way to explain it, but it's the variety pack of investing.
Yeah. Index fund, if it's tracking the S&P 500, the S&P 500 is just 500 US companies. So all it's doing is essentially grouping those 500 companies together in one single investment, and you just buy the index fund.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about dividend?
Dividend. So I would say that dividend is when a company is doing really, really well and they don't need to reinvest their money back into the company. So instead, they pay their shareholders out for the business that they're doing. So the simplest way, if you're somebody that's investing in funds, some of the funds that you own are going to have companies that are paying dividends. And usually those companies are companies that have been around a long time. You can think like Johnson & Johnson, like a company that's been around forever. They're not aggressively reinvesting the money back into the business. So when they make profits, they can share them with the shareholders instead. So that's part of your return when you invest in a fund. Part of your return will be dividends.
Makes sense. What about a bond? What is a bond? I know we hear it a lot, but like at the end of the day, like I don't know if I actually really understand what a bond is.
Sure. So I think about a bond as like an IOU.
Okay.
Like a bond is when you loan money. You can loan money to a company. You can loan money to a municipality. You can loan money to the government, and they're going to pay you money back for that loan, right? They're going to pay you interest on the loan. So in a fund, there's a lot of bond funds, and bond investing in like single bonds is a whole nother like complex topic. And I don't do a lot of that.
Yeah.
So the easiest way to invest in bonds is to invest in a bond fund. And so if you do that, you're investing in a bunch of different entities that are paying you a return for using your money. So you hear a lot. One of the things that is frustrating and challenging about financial jargon is you hear these different terms for things. For bonds, you'll hear them referred to as fixed income. And the reason it's fixed income is because theoretically, you're giving money to an organization or some type of entity, and they're paying you back a specific rate. So that's why it's called fixed income, which is different than stocks, which are called equities, which just means ownership in a company. If you've ever like worked for a company, or your friends have worked for a company and they want equity, that's ownership. It's the same thing when you buy funds.
Makes sense. I got one more for you. Bull and bear market. So I hear this term get thrown around, you know, usually sometime around a recession or when the economy is doing really well. Can you break down what bull and bear market are?
Sure. So bull market is when the stock market is doing well. Bear market is when it's not doing well for an extended period of time. So one thing I will say is that there's not a super standardized definition of exactly how long and the percentages, but usually it's like if the market has gone up for 20% plus, you know, in a row-ish, that's a bull market. And the easiest way to remember this, it's super corny, but when a bull like attacks, they like swipe their horns up. So that's when the market is going up. And then when a bear attacks you, I hope that never happens, they swipe down. So it's just a trend of the stock market. And so this is helpful to know, understand a little bit about bull markets and bear markets. Not a lot. You don't need a PhD in them. But one thing that's helpful to understand is that the stock market is always cyclical. So there are always going to be bull markets and there's always going to be bear markets. But bull markets, the ones that go up, happen more frequently and they last longer, which is great for us investors. Whereas bear markets happen, I think roughly every 3 to 4 years. And it's not great, right? Your money goes down, but it is an opportunity to invest and to ride that wave back up. So we should expect to live through bull markets and bear markets and recessions. That's part of the cycles of the stock market. So if you're somebody that's nervous about investing, I definitely encourage you to learn a little bit more about the cycles, because then when it happens, which it will, then you're prepared and you understand that these things are cyclical.
So to build on that, should I be paying attention to bull bear markets and allocating my investments based off of what's happening? You know, if we're on a bull market right now on a big tear, should I be tampering down my investments and waiting until a bear market starts and then investing more money when a bear market happens because stocks are on sale?
My personal opinion is absolutely not. And the reason for this is because nobody's really good at timing the market. Even large financial institutions. I remember, Justin, in January of 2023, reading all these articles from Wells Fargo and Bank of America and the St. Louis Federal Reserve, and every single one of them is predicting a 50 to 100% chance of a recession in 2023. And the market went up 24%. So if all of those people with endless resources and economics degrees can't accurately predict the market, I'm sorry to tell you that neither can you. But that's okay, because it's so much easier to just consistently invest over time. The other thing I always tell people about like bear and bull markets is one of the better studies I've seen on this is if you just dump your money all into the stock market at once, even if you dump it in at a bad time, you're still going to benefit from compound interest. So a lot of people end up like hesitating. And right now, I get this question all the time, because we're right now in what is it, March 2024 as we're recording this, the market's having a great rally. And so a lot of people are holding out, waiting for the bottom. But you don't know when the bottom is. I don't know when the bottom is. So I personally believe that when you have the money to invest, as long as it's aligned with your goals, it's not money that you need in the next 3 to 5 years, that it makes sense to just put it in the market and leave it there.
Yeah, the unpredictability almost makes it a really easy decision.
Yeah. Like
the fact that you don't know and no one knows just means continue doing the same thing month after month or week after week, however your dollar cost averaging in. And you'll be a winner some weeks or months, and you'll be a loser some weeks or months. But over the long run, and I think you know these stats too or something, it's crazy. Like it's up like 79% over a 10-year period, and it's up like 95% over a 20-year period. And it's like 100% certainty that the stock market is going up over like a 25-year period or something crazy like that.
Yeah, actually the worst 20-year return is 6.4% is my understanding. So
yeah,
you're going to be fine. I actually tell people all the time when I teach them about bear and bull markets, now I say, now don't pay attention to them. Just like, it's good for you to know so that you feel comfortable when the market does drop. But the best investors I know are the ones that I work with that say, I want to like choose some investments and never look at it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, you're going to do great. Like, that's so important.
So Tess, you mentioned that you educate people, you coach people. Can you share a little bit about what you have going on in your coaching program and who you support and how people can get connected with you?
Sure, absolutely. So the best way to connect with me is on Instagram at WealthWithTess. And I help mostly women, although I'm anyone is welcome. It's an inclusive environment, but I do create it to make sure it's a safe space for women to learn about money. We have an incredible community that includes online coaching and an online course. And so I run small group coaching cohorts every couple months, and they are so fun. It's such a great group of women. Honestly, the networking is amazing. Like that, we learn about the basics of investing. You learn how to create your own index fund portfolio. And for many women, I help them break up with their financial advisor. That seems to be a big topic. But we also spend a lot of time just thinking about money mindset and realizing that this is just the beginning. Like investing is just one way you can build wealth. There's so many ways to do it. And so if you've been on the fence and you're listening to this, I encourage you to learn about investing, because it can open your eyes to so many different ways to create wealth. So that's what I do in my program. So that's the best way to find me is on Instagram at WealthWithTess. If you have any questions, feel free to DM me. I really check them, me, not somebody else. And yeah, and then I also have a free guide that I was going to share with Justin. So I have a guide that has, as Justin shared, in one of my goals as a financial coach is to always break down financial terms as easy as possible. So I have a list of the 26 most used investing terms, in my opinion, that you can download for free. And I'll make sure Justin gets the link.
Perfect. Tess, final question for you. If you had the opportunity to teach a 16-week class to a group of graduating college seniors on a topic that isn't normally covered in the classroom, what would you teach and how would you teach it?
I would teach a class called How to Make and Grow Money. And I would teach it on exploring different types of careers, entrepreneurship versus corporate. I'm a big believer that there's not one right way. I think you can have a wonderful career in corporate and build significant wealth that way and retire early if you want. You can do the same thing as an entrepreneur. One is not necessarily better than the other. It really just depends on who you are. So I think exploring different types of careers and entrepreneurship avenues, definitely ways to invest your money, and then also additional income streams. So I think my class would probably just cover how to create multiple income streams and why that's important. I thought about this question earlier because it blew my mind that when you really think about it, you know, college sets you up to learn all these specific skills. But at the end of the day, the number one thing we need to survive is money. So the fact that there is not a class called How to Make and Grow Your Money kind of blows my mind, actually. So that's what I would call it. And that's what we would do over the 16 weeks.
That's such a good class. Such a simple yet straightforward title too. Like, I love that. Like, that would be such
I know. I want to teach it now.
That'd be a great class and a much needed class. I mean, that should be one of those required classes every single year, I feel like.
Totally, totally. Or it could be like how to keep and grow your, but you know, I don't know. There's just so many ways that, like,
yeah.
One thing I'm grateful for, just to circle back to the beginning of our conversation, is cruise ships. Because I never would have realized that there's a way to make money and travel while living on a cruise ship. Mm-hmm. The only reason I learned that is because I graduated into a recession and I couldn't find a job. So, you know, I think a class that explores there's so many different ways to live and make money and grow your money would be really cool.
Yeah, and I think a lot of listeners are realizing that. I mean, that's a big reason why I love financial independence, not because I want to sit on a beach and sip a pina colada, but because I want to make work optional. Or make work flexible, you know, into my 30s and 40s. Because honestly, we just don't have that much time. And there are so many things that I want to do as a podcaster, as a business owner, as somebody that has a 9-to-5 too. It's really hard. I find everything is finally on my plate. Everything that is on my plate right now are all things that I really love. Like, I had to say, of course, no to all the bad things. But now I'm having to start to say no to some of the good things in order to say yes to the great things. And I just want money to kind of get out of the way of being an obstacle for me to say yes to some things. Because, you know, 1 year I might want to, you know, put my head down and grind really hard at growing a business. And the next year, maybe I do want to travel, or I do want to invest heavily into a hobby, or I do want to work at a plant shop or do something random or whatever I really decide. But the fact that I want to make sure money isn't beholding me to a certain decision is really, really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about optionality, right? It's not necessarily about retiring early. It's just about having options. So I love that.
Once again, this is Tess Waresmith, Wealth with Tess on Instagram. She's got a lot of great freebies and content out there. So go look her up. Tess, this was such a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Justin. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the episode. As always, I appreciate your kind words. If you want to leave us a rating and review on your podcast player right now, that would absolutely make my day. If you want to find episode show notes, our blog, and other great resources, head over to tsirpodcast.com. If you have follow-up questions, an idea for a future episode, or just want to say hi, we have a contact form on our website, and those messages go straight into my inbox, and I promise you, I will reply. But all right, guys, I really appreciate you tuning in. I love you all, and you're not alone. Let's keep making it through our struggles together.